Listen.
October 21st, 2010, and the main science topic tonight, I will be talking about how plants change the chemicals in the ground into different chemicals, and this is similar to the process that comets use to take basic atomic and molecular structures in outer space and build up larger molecules all the way up to the nucleotides of DNA. And then as the plants on Earth take this material, which basically is dirt, which came from a comet originally, and then, of course, most of the dirt is humus from other plants that have grown and then broken down. Or it could be from rocks, sand, etching a little bit of those chemicals off and changing it into chemicals. Now, there's a chemical factory in the jungles, in the woods, in the forests, and each plant turns out a different set of chemicals and vitamins, minerals, and beneficial chemicals for the human being and or the animals that eat these based on the type of plant. So that's a very interesting process that two plants growing side by side in the same dirt will produce different chemicals. So the plants actually are basically a chemical factory. So that'll be the main science topic. And at any rate, first a couple of announcements. A good friend of mine, John Moore, quite a while ago started promoting the idea and forwarding the idea that has been, many of you have already seen this, that the Gulf Stream loop has stopped. It has stalled due to the BP oil spill and the spraying of chemicals, etc., that has gone on in the Gulf of Mexico. But what does this mean to us in the United States? Well, if you're on the eastern seaboard all the way up to Canada, that could mean a much colder winter. But what happens is that Gulf Stream wraps around the tip of Florida, brings warm water and warmth from the Gulf of Mexico up through a current that goes all the way up into the northern Atlantic, cooling places or warming up places like England, Ireland, and going all the way into Scandinavia and northern Russia. So let's back up a little bit and talk about where the weather comes from in the United States. That's something I've done a lot of studying, is the weather patterns. And the United States basically gets most of its weather from the Pacific Ocean. If you want to know what's going to happen next week in the U.S., you look at the Pacific Ocean. You look at the storms. You look at the water content coming out the Pacific Ocean. For example, in the wintertime, if you want to know what's going on in the what's going to happen in the United States, you watch that ocean current and the air currents above the ocean. And, for example, many times in the winter, the air jet stream will go all the way up to the Arctic Circle, bringing that moist Pacific air, and then it comes racing down across Alberta and brings that Arctic cold snap down from the north into Minnesota, into Wisconsin, into the Dakotas, and it's called an Alberta Clipper. That's the common street name for that, but basically it's the jet stream going all the way up from the South Pacific and going all the way up into the Arctic Circle and then wrapping back down, snaking back down in through the United States and bringing that cold, moist air down. And then when that meets with warmer, moist air from the south, that's where you get your winter storms, most of the winter storms. And this can stretch as far east as New York State or as far west as Washington State. But in general, it comes down through the middle of the United States, and that's why you'll see the cold band stretching down with Minnesota right in the middle usually. That makes Minnesota and parts of North Dakota and South Dakota some of the coldest places in the world at that time. But anyway, the point is that the weather that is actually materializing in the United States comes from a weather current pattern that forms way west in the Pacific. that northern jet stream wraps and snakes around Earth from the west, moving to the east, snaking up and down. And then again, if we get from, say, in the Midwest, United States, Midwestern states, if we get a warm weather pattern from the South Pacific that sweeps through Arizona and California, or it comes straight across from Washington, then we get warming weather, and we have a nice warm set of days in the wintertime. So it depends on what's going on in the Pacific. Well, the same thing happens with all the way from Spain to Portugal, England, Ireland, the English Isles, all the way up into Scandinavia. Much of their weather depends on the Gulf Stream bringing that warm water up into the bringing the water up into warm water up into that region, and then that the air moving across that warms those areas. So what happens if the jet stream changes? What happens if the Gulf Stream currents change? That could mean tremendously cold winters for those areas that have enjoyed warm weather. So islands like England, Ireland have enjoyed relatively mild weather, even though they're fairly far north. Now remember, in the old days, the Vikings came across and settled through those areas. In fact, my ancestors were Vikings who settled in Ireland. And so I look like a blue-eyed, blonde, curly-haired Viking. That's what my ancestry is. At any rate, the point is that throughout history, there has been tremendously mild weather up in those regions, all the way from Scandinavia, down the northern coast of France, through England, Ireland, and then over to Nova Scotia. And that could change drastically this coming winter, thanks to the BP oil spill. It's always very difficult to predict weather and climate change, but that is something that could very much happen in the near future. So at any rate, something to watch out for. There's a lot of information on this on the internet. It was first introduced by some scientists, I believe in France and in Russia, but a number of people now taking that very seriously. Let's see, what other topics? I have to mention this, that over the past number of days, I was not aware of this, but the water filter and the Flax buttons on my web ordering page were out of order. They were not working. They were not linked properly to the ordering page. That will be rectified probably by about midnight tonight, so those will be back in working order. So if you happen to go and try to order water filter products or Flax products over the past week, I apologize for that. I wasn't quite aware of that, and then finally enough people notified us through email, etc., that these were not working. So those will be back working again, like I say, by midnight tonight. So that's very important, because the new product line that I have, the freeze-dried Mountain House freeze-dried food, really needs a water filter. So there's a lot of people who are starting to take emergency food in a very serious light. I'll be talking a little bit about that at the beginning of this show. And that's why I chose the topic also of food chemical changes. And that gets into the topic also of genetically altered foods, something that's occurring these days in the food market, where you go to the grocery store, you buy vegetables, they look wonderful, they're all in a row at the grocery store, they look good, but they have altered chemicals in them. And so a lot of the food you get today and will be getting in the future are chemically altered foods, and you won't even know about it. But that's why also the Mountain House freeze-dried food is not genetically modified food. It's very good quality food. And the point is that if you're planning for the future, and this is one of the big reasons I started to offer freeze-dried food is because I'm personally pretty nervous. Let's put it that way. Scared might be another term that I would use about the immediate future. We're starting to get indications that early November could be some kind of major event along the lines of we don't know what, kind of a September 11th type of event. Because basically the economy is in tatters. There's no way for this to recover. I'm not sure how things are hanging on as they are. But a lot of people are taking seriously the idea that they need to provide for themselves. And in the past, I had resisted putting food up or freeze-dried food. And then I went out, and I've been researching this for a long time. The type of emergency foods that are available are freeze-dried. There are the dehydrated foods, and I'll tell you my personal opinion on this, is that I would not personally store dehydrated foods for my own consumption for emergency. They're good for camping, things like that. The biggest problem with dehydrated foods is they weigh a lot. They weigh about two times the amount of freeze-dried food. They're a 4% water content, whereas freeze-dried is about a 2%, almost bone-dry food. So that's one issue. But dehydrated foods require cooking. You typically do not get meat and protein, good sources of protein in dehydrated food. And dehydrated foods spoil with freezing because of the high water content. So they don't last well through freezing or high temperatures. And those all go away when you talk about freeze-dried food. The freeze-dried food has a shelf life of about 30 years in the container. And they don't have to be cooked, whereas dehydrated food does require cooking. So if you're talking emergency food, in my way of thinking, freeze-dried food is the only way to go, and Mountain House is the highest quality. It's the best on the market, and that's why I went out and became a distributor for Mountain House freeze-dried food. That's now on my webpage, and I'll be talking about that in a minute. But let's go back to the ancient days. Let's talk about the food that came out of the pyramids after they opened up the pyramids. Remember that they went in and found seeds of grain. Now it's called kamut, K-A-M-U-T, I believe it's spelled. But that was the wheat of Egypt. And remember the biblical stories of wheat in old Egypt. The seeds for kamut, which is now being grown commercially out in the western United States, up in the grain belts, up in the northern, in Canada and western United States. Kamut is a very hardy, very nutritious grain, but the original seeds for this came from the pyramids of Egypt, which were thousands of years old. The point is that you can store seeds if they're kept dry in a cool place. And that was the situation, of course, in the deserts in Egypt. It was very dry and away from moisture, and also very cool. And so one almost thinks that might be why the pyramids were built, as a place to harbor some of the old seeds for a long period of time. Honey also has been stored for thousands of years, and it's just the same. I know I've been playing around with storing seeds of all types for gardening, for sprouting. And the basic rule of thumb is you keep them dry, you keep them in a container where the air doesn't change regularly, a very well contained, sealed container, and then away from sunlight. You keep them cool. You don't let the temperatures swing up and down. That causes condensation. So at any rate, those are basically the rules of keeping grains or seeds. And some seeds will break down over time. But at any rate, the point is that food can be stored over long periods of time if it's kept under the right conditions. And, of course, being dry is one of the first rules The wheat, for example, there's other types of wheat that are standard in the United States. The hard red wheat that's used for sprouting. There's the winter wheat and the spring wheat, and both of those are used for sprouting. I'm not sure. There's varying opinions amongst various experts regarding which is better, the spring wheat or the winter wheat. But it's the wheat kernel, the shell of the wheat kernel has a very hard impervious shell, and that protects the inner part, which is, of course, the seed that would germinate. And so that's what you would use for sprouting. So basically what I recommend for people, if they're going to be serious about providing for themselves, I recommend having a good supply. And this, of course, the seeds, I don't sell those. Those are already available commercially. But rice, beans, then grains like wheat or kamut, you can buy those commercially in 50-pound bags. Keep them in a dry place. They store very easily. And also then the freeze-dried food and flax, which I sell. I do sell flax on my webpage. And then the freeze-dried food. And then you have a complete diet stored right there. You don't have to go any place. The seeds you can sprout. You can also plant them. Like the flax seed that comes as an organic, a very high-quality organic seed. You can plant them, you can sprout them, you can eat them as they are. And any of these can be eaten without cooking, and that's why it's very important for emergency to have things that don't require cooking. A lot of times you might have cooking facilities for a while, but those will, if you have enough food, you will probably run out of your cooking ability long before you run out of food. So the last thing you need is a food storage item that requires cooking. And that's why, like, once again, I don't recommend dehydrated foods for long-term storage. And once again, dehydrated, you really are not able to get meat, which is your main source of protein. Now, there are people who are vegetarians and disagree with that, but the vast majority of people out there eat meat, so you want to maintain the same kind of diet that you've already had. Let's go back to plants and electrical food. I call it electrical food because the plants literally use electricity to grow. Now, I spent some time in Ohio. I spent some time working with some scientists back in the mid-1970s, at the University of Ohio, Ohio State University, I should say. And they were working and measuring electrical properties of plants. And this comes from two aspects. One is they would shield the plants from external electrical fields. The plants simply didn't grow. They also used the following. The professors there were using electrical discharges to spur plant growth, including that of funguses and mushrooms, which was very interesting. And all of this is in the journals, much of this very old research. The other aspect of plants is they form an internal electric field. The plants are like a battery. So they both respond to external electric fields, and they generate their own internal electric fields. And it became apparent, for example, that trees, when the leaves flutter in the wind, part of that is to move and to draw the water up into the plant, into the tree, or into the plant, the same way with any type of plant, that when the wind blows and those leaves move around, there's a process of evaporation going on that draws new water up. That new water coming up brings minerals into the plant and also helps generate the electric field. So once again, the plants are responding to an electric field, external electric field, and where does that come from? It comes from the sun. So these scientists were very tuned to the fact that things were electrical out there. Now, let's go out and look at comets in outer space. Comets are very electrical entities. As you know, the plasma discharge comet model talks, that's my model for comets I developed decades and decades ago. It's been ultimately proven. And by the way, just a little aside note here, something coming up in the early days of November, I'll be covering this as it happens. There's a comet that's right now, tonight is a very good night. There's a comet called Comet 103P Hartley 2. I'll repeat that, and you can look on the internet because there are charts describing where this comet can be found in the evening sky. And you pretty much need binoculars or a small telescope to see it. So it's not one of those amazing comets that's going to be big and clear to the visible, to the naked eye. Comet 103, capital P, and then the name is Hartley, H-A-R-T-L-E-Y, I believe it is, and then the number 2. Comet 103P Hartley 2. Kind of a mouthful. But at any rate, it's visible in the night sky tonight. And in early November, the point is that the Deep Impact spacecraft, which in 2005 passed by the comet Tempel 1 and sent an impactor into the nucleus of that comet. In fact, I was a guest the evening that that happened was July 4th of 2005, and I was a guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie and discussed the results of that, and it was very, very interesting. We were all waiting for NASA to post the results of the flyby, and they withheld them for many, many weeks, actually. But we did have enough information to know that the nucleus of Comet Tempel 1 had really no water at all, very minimal amount of water. I have a posting on my webpage regarding that. But in July 4th of 2005, Comet Tempel 1 was encountered by the Deep Impact spacecraft. Well, that same spacecraft in early November this year, that's coming up in a couple weeks, will be also flying by Comet 103P Hartley 2. So this is a comet that has been around for, I believe it was discovered about 24 years ago by an amateur astronomer from Australia named Hartley. And so at any rate, the point is that we'll be getting another glimpse, close-up glimpse, of a comet nucleus that's active right now. It'll be very interesting because NASA always tries to play this dirty snowball comet model card, and every time it turns up more ridiculous than the time before. With no water, dark black nucleus, and they say, well, yeah, that's that new type of water, that NASA water, that dark, very extremely hot ice. It's a private joke we have amongst some of my friends and myself that NASA has invented a new kind of ice. It's extremely hot and black. So at any rate, it's kind of like tar that you tar the road with, but NASA still calls it ice. But at any rate, I'll be covering that story quite a bit in the upcoming weeks. But comets, back to the story of comets. Comets take raw materials from outer space, draw them in under fairly powerful electrical forces, and change them into larger atomic structures all the way up to hydrocarbons, oil. That's where oil comes from, the large hydrocarbon chains, in, all the way from the benzenes and the very light hydrocarbons all the way up to the very heavy chains, what we call crude oil, that came into the atmosphere hundreds of different times as the Earth passed through the tails of comets many, many times. And, for example, my book, The Diamond Principle, starts out with the story that how did the oil get down there 18,000 feet under the ocean's floor? How did that oil get there that the BP company, the British Petroleum Company, was drilling into? And some of these oil deposits are as deep as 35,000 feet. Where was the fern forest that created these, or so-called allegedly created this oil? Well, of course, it's absolutely ridiculous. Something very different happened. And that the whole point is it proves to the average person on the street that the story proposed by standard science, the story proposed that the Earth formed billions of years ago all at one time, is ridiculous. It also shows that the source of oil did not come from fern forests and dinosaur bones. It came from some very different process. And it didn't just magically appear in the middle of the ground in vast oceans by some magical process, which some people claim known as the adiabatic process. It came from the Earth passing through comet tails, and Earth itself was a comet at one time in the solar system, forming this the structure that we now see. So at any rate, the point is that comets are very electrical. They take basic chemical elements, for example, hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and they build all of the types of chemicals, the basic forms of chemicals we see, ammonia. All of these are formed in the comet tails, and then Earth will pass through these comet tails, some of them, especially the big ones where we're basically drawing in a tremendous amount of this material over a period of time, and then it becomes part of our Earth. That's where water came from. That's where the great flood came from. Remember that the Earth oceans were 600 feet below what they are today. Minimal estimate, 300 feet, probably more like 600 feet of water was covered the entire Earth in the last great flood, which man actually lived through and was able to write and tell about. There were large societies that existed prior to that in the United States, in the around the world, in South America, what we call South America. So the comets are very essential contributors to the planets like Earth. Now, once again, food comes from plants. Animals eat the plants, and they then again do a chemical change producing a strength and muscle in the animals, bones, etc., building up the animals. So the animals take a mycorrhizal type of existence along with plants. They eat the plants, digest the plants, and so every animal has a particular set of plants that are beneficial. Some are poisonous. In the tropical rainforest, there are vast amounts of chemicals being produced. Chemists are constantly working down there with little frogs, lizards, plants, trying to look for new chemicals that might be beneficial to man, that may produce the types of chemicals you find in pharmaceuticals. Most of the pharmaceutical products, I wouldn't say most, but many of them, came from tropical plants of some kind or another, or tropical animals, or little critters, little creatures such as frogs, and they produce this very bizarre array of chemicals, and only uniquely sometimes to those particular animals or plants, etc. So the idea is that, once again, you could take two different types of plants, put them side by side in the same dirt, and one plant will produce an entirely different set of chemicals than the plant right next to it. So they are chemical production factories, basically. And of course, now we're producing these on a large scale, and man has gotten involved to change the chemical structure of plants. And by the way, I'm looking out the window right now, and I believe I'm looking at a full moon. I'm not sure if tonight is the full moon, but it's very, very big and full looking, at least tonight. So I'm going to look online when I get off the show and check that out. But if you're in a place where you can see the moon tonight, I believe we're dealing with at least a very near full moon. Very beautiful sight of full moon, harvest moon, I would call it. But back to the idea, and once again, the moon and its electrical conditions very much affect plants, animals on Earth, and the tides, of course. Plants and animals respond to the moon, both from its gravitational effect on the Earth causing the tides, but also electrically. When there's a new moon or a full moon, which means there's an electrical alignment of the moon with Earth and the sun, there are strange things happen. People act differently. Astrology has some very rudimentary, fundamental sound. It has very sound scientific basis because if you understand that these electrical alignments cause electrical conditions in the solar system to change, plants and animals and humans respond to these different conditions. So at any rate, the point is that we are an electrical species, we are an electrical planet, conditions of chemicals, of chemical reactions that benefit the plants, the animals, and man, etc., and the Earth itself. All of these are electrical in nature. Now, isn't it amazing, absolutely, utterly amazing, that standard science does not recognize this small fact, or the fact that major events have happened in the history of the Earth to form the structure we see today, the Earth itself, the modification of plants that happens very rapidly when these major events occur, the stress that is put on plants. That's something that Velikovsky developed, the idea that there are rapid changes when very drastic events occur, and these drastic events typically occur when large comets come through the solar system, passing near Earth, not with a direct collision, but with action at a distance, both electrical, mechanical, through gravitational waves, etc. So the point being that the Earth, the complex planet that we live on, responds to electrical conditions in the solar system. All of this stems back to the fact that the sun puts out a non-uniform distribution of protons and electrons in its solar wind. It's a wind of electrical current coming off in all directions from the sun. And it forms a battery. We all live in that battery. The Earth does. Jupiter does. All the planets live in that battery. And we are just one electrical association, let's put it that way. All the planets. Right now we have an alignment with Jupiter, and the other night I called up actually an astrologer, a friend of mine who knows some astrologers, and I said, look at the conjunction that just occurred between the moon, which is nearing full status, and Jupiter. And so this basically, the astrologers agreed that there were significant aspects to this conjunction between Jupiter, the moon, Earth, and the sun. And this is not because of some hocus-pocus science. It's because there are electrical connections that occur when the planets and the moon align like this. There are electrical currents that pass between them. This is something that the Russian scientists, as I was working with them back in the mid-1990s, they were looking at my work because that was the key for them to understand the scientific basis for astrology. Now, astrology throughout history was one of those empirical sciences where people simply noticed that when such and such a thing was happening. Let's talk about the planet Mercury going retrograde. This is something that is very well observed by astrologers, in which the planet Mercury seems to go backwards in its orbit. It's just an optical illusion. But basically, the idea is that when Mercury does that, we get some very strange results here on Earth. And during that retrograde motion, the electrical conditions very much affect Earth. Let's talk about another such electrical alignment. When Venus is in conjunction with the sun, in other words, Venus is passing between us and the sun, we tend to get the flu more on Earth than other times. There's a spike in the flu, the bird flu, the swine flu epidemics that occur on Earth, and also the number of sunspots increases, something that's markedly measurable when Earth and Venus align electrically with the sun. So these are all electrical conditions that affect plants, animals, Earth, and of course the moon is linked to this. We live in a very electrical solar system. But at any rate, and we've evolved with this. Just think of all of the little sea animals and clams and shells which respond to lunar cycles. Many of the cycles of for example, just to give another example, the menstrual cycle of the human species of women follows the lunar cycle. This is locked into the electrical conditions on Earth, very much tuned to the electrical clock of the solar system. And that's a term that I'm just going to mention tonight that I'm coining on the air, the electrical clock. And that's basically what it is in the solar system. So I'll be talking more about that in future shows. But that's where this discussion has been leading to. Now, I promised to talk a little bit about the freeze-dried food. This is not a commercial. This is just basically a statement that in the future, I really think something's going to happen here. The economic condition cannot last. We're looking at a time right before elections, and right around the time of elections here, just slightly after the elections, where the governments are going to try and put the new world economy, so to speak, in place. And, of course, this is not going to go easily as people's entire existence is going to change. At any rate, that's why I've basically put up the freeze-dried food and talked about it on the webpage. I just want to mention a little bit about what I call sticker shock. Now, imagine how much you would spend next year by going to the grocery store if you bought food at the grocery store. You go there every week and then multiply that times the number of people in your household. It turns out that freeze-dried food is very economical. Because if you look at the amount of the cost per meal, it's only a couple dollars per meal. Typically, actually much less than what you would pay if you just went to the grocery store and bought regular food. But the point is, there might be a time coming up here shortly where the food in the grocery store just isn't going to be there. And so that's why I have posted this. So when you look at this, imagine what you would spend on groceries for the next year, and that this might be your only source of food. I myself have been for a long time. Now and then I just go on a simple diet based on grains and rice, beans, a bit of the freeze-dried food also. And I'll tell you, it's a very healthy way to eat. An extremely healthy way to eat because you know you're getting all of my grains, etc., rice and beans are all organic. So basically, I have one of the healthiest diets that you could possibly have. And I'm eating exactly the same foods that I would eat if there were an emergency. So that's the way you want to look at this, and something I've said before. I've done many, many, many radio shows on emergency planning. And the one thing I say is that you should be living every day as if there were an emergency. And basically, you will be eating much healthier. You'll be a much healthier person. You'll be exercising. You'll be doing all the things you should be doing on a daily basis by living as if you were in an emergency. And part of this, of course, is having a water filter. It's something I use every day. In fact, I have a secondary container on the counter now to empty the water filter bottom container into that other container. It's got a spigot just like the base of the water filter. And basically, I'm using much more water now. I'm using it for sprouting. I'm doing sprouts. I have many, many different types of sprouts that I'm rotating. I'm eating the organic beans, rices, and grains. And the grains you can eat by either chopping up through a grinder into either a flour or just very crude. And there's a food called borgul, internationally used, not so much in the U.S., but you find it all over Russia, China, India, the Mideast. Borgul, it's called in Russian, or at any rate. But basically, it's just wheat ground up in a very coarse manner, mixed with whatever you have, tomatoes, garlic, onions, other spices, whatever you want to put in there, and that's a basic food around the world, just a basic grain. But anyway, if you eat like this, you're going to start to notice that you're going to be very healthy. Another thing that's essential in my diet is flax. It's something I eat on a daily basis. I either grind it up or else you always should grind flax a bit. Break that outer seal because it's very durable and it's hard to digest. Single seed, and also with the wheat, especially, you want to either sprout it or crack it, cracked wheat, or the flax also, grind it at least a bit. You can put it in anything you cook. You can put it in water and soak it and eat it raw. You can sprout those seeds, both of them. Many different ways to prepare them. They're extremely healthy. They provide you with enzymes. And the flax is something that in biblical times, they talk about flax as being the essential health food of man. I've always said that you could live entirely on flax and you would be one of the healthiest people in the world. Extremely, extremely good for you. A very good balance of the omega-3s and the omega-6 oils. It's just an extremely healthy seed to eat. It has many other properties that are very beneficial. So basically right now on my webpage, I feel I have a complete rounded emergency food product line. So with the Mountain House freeze-dried food, you can buy just literally any combination of vegetables, of meat, of and pre-cooked foods that are meals. You just open them up and mix it with water, and you have basically a meal. So there's all types of varieties there. And I would not go without flax. So here's what I suggest, that basically minimum, buy some cases of the freeze-dried food. Have one case of flax per person per year minimum. I would even say two cases per person per year. But look at your annual food budget and look at what you're going to spend at the grocery store next year and start to imagine and do what I do, if I can make this suggestion. Stop going to the grocery store. Stop buying genetically altered foods. Stop thinking that what you're getting there is good for you and start eating a very good diet of taking your dried, as I said, rice, beans, grains, such as the red wheat. I don't sell those particular things. What I do sell, though, is the flax, the whole seed. I would recommend buying cases of the seeds. And then you need, for all of these, you need a water filter. This, if you did this, you would be living as if you were in an emergency. So if there ever was an emergency, you wouldn't change. You would already know your food. You would already know how to prepare it. You'd know the many varieties of food you could eat. And your life would be very simple. There wouldn't be a big calamity and change. It's like a friend of mine told me one time. He said he knew a guy in Texas. I think it was a relative of his, an uncle. He was a young guy, and he asked his uncle, what it was like during the Depression. Well, the uncle happened to live on a ranch in Texas, made all his own tools, did everything on the ranch, and his response was, I heard there was a Depression. Basically, he never went to town for anything, he didn't use money, and he didn't need anything. That's what you want to be if there's a meltdown of the economy. That's what you want if things really go down, which I'm not making a prediction. I'm just telling people that my opinion, and it's not just my opinion, if you listen to any radio show and the people who are experts based on the economy, etc. Another thing is that I look at freeze-dried food as an investment. For example, many people put their money in gold and silver. Well, that's wonderful, but I wouldn't buy any gold and silver until I had food stored up for at least a year for everybody that I would consider in my group. And that's important because some people think that if the economy goes down, they're going to go out and they're going to have their silver and gold. But I'll tell you something, if somebody has a storage facility of food, they're not going to sell you that for gold or silver or anything. They're not going to trade you anything for that food. So food is something you have to get now, you have to get prepared, and once you get it, then you're set, you're prepared. You don't have to get prepared again. You don't have to prepare every month. That's one of the important things of understanding. So for a lot of people, buying freeze-dried food and flax and a water filter, might be the last major investment that they make in their life, or in at least the near future. But all of this is important because it's important to understand that man evolved on this planet along with the food supply, along with the chemicals that come out of foods. And to be healthy, you have to eat healthy food. There's no two ways about it. You can always mix this with fruits and vegetables. If you have those available, I remember when I was a kid, back in Minnesota, back in the 1950s, there was someone that might send us a case of grapefruit from Florida. And that was a once-in-a-year thing, once every 2 years, that we would get grapefruit. It wasn't like now where you go to the grocery store and you get grapefruit. Then you just, if you want grapefruit, you buy those. There's five different types of oranges. There's five different types of apples. All of this is trucked in from all over the country or all over the world in some cases. If you want fruit, they're available all 12 months of the year. That was not the case in the 1950s. You only got what was in season, you only got what was available at the time, and if you wanted it for more months of the year, you had to store it up, you had to can it, you had to do something, you had to spend some time and effort in putting that up so that you would have it throughout the year, because you only got it for a very short time of the year. It was only available for a very short time of the year. So people don't realize what things used to be like, and very soon we could be going back to those conditions. As the ability transportation comes to an end, your ability to go to the grocery store or the ability of grocery stores to move products around. The world is a very much a changing place. But yeah, the biggest thing that I would consider in storing up food is having something that's very easily storable. Like the freeze-dried food comes in six cans in a case. You stack them up, and a whole year's supply of food for one person you can put in the corner of one of your closets. And so it seems expensive, but when you realize that that's what you're going to eat for a year possibly, and that's all you're going to have, there will be no other source of food, that you can open those cans, simply mix it with clean water from your water filter, combine that with grains that you're sprouting or grains that you're grinding, and hopefully have enough resources to cook a little bit sometimes, you could get by very nicely for a year. In fact, you'd be a very healthy person. then you combine that, if you can find something else like fruits or seasonal type plants, whatever, if you had a small garden. But there might be a time also when a garden is not even going to be a practicality. Because if everybody out there is hurting, your garden is going to be fair game any time the first time something starts to grow on it. So you might be limited to things that you have stored up. We might be in a situation where there's extremely bad weather for a while. We might have, it's hard to say, between natural disasters, man-made disasters, and everything in between, it's almost impossible to predict what kind of a condition we would be under for the duration of an event, what you might call an event. So at any rate, that's why understanding food, understanding what it takes to be prepared is important. The importance of clean water, this is something that I've spent a lot of time researching, I've lived it, and I'll tell you something, a lot of people in this country do not understand what it's like in a third world country. And the United States and Europe and other countries are very fast becoming third world countries, where basically the cash has been drawn out of the economy. It hasn't gone away, it's just in somebody's bank account and it's not moving. So the cash flow through the economy has come to a halt. And that's one of the main problems here. That's one of the main problems with the fact that the whole economy is just coming to a screeching halt. I put a posting on my webpage the other day. I said the economy at stalemate. Stalemate is a condition in the game of chess where you move your chess pieces and basically nobody can win the game. There's a checkmate condition also where you've moved and the other person's king cannot make a move without being taken. So it's the end of the game. In either case, the game cannot continue, and that's the condition of the economy in the U.S., and the rest of the world is going to follow. So that's simply on its way. That's going to happen. In my way of thinking, one always has to be careful of making dire predictions, but throwing in a little bit of man-made help, and we're well on our way to that type of scenario. And when this happens, it's always been my opinion and many of the people that I know that deal with these topics, that when these conditions start to occur, we are going to be, we may very well, may possibly start to see the beginnings of possibly a Planet X type scenario. That the people that are in charge, so to speak, have information not available to the common man, that something is on its way into this solar system. At any rate, I am not a person to predict in that respect either. I don't pick dates, but we've always expected that when the economy is starts to fold, it starts to go under, that is a time. These are planned events. These are not mistakes or random events. These are planned events. And when that starts to happen and when you start to see major. And by the way, Wernher von Braun, the head of NASA, the ex-head of the German World War II Russian rocket program, stated publicly that the last stage would be a fake alien invasion. And we start to see inklings of this coming out. And it looks like I'm about out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And I'll just give out the webpage. JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. And by the way, the freeze-dried food is only available through the webpage with online ordering. It's not available through mail order. You can order it, but we do hold the checks because of the typically larger amount of the checks. If you do order by mail order, we will hold the checks until they clear, just because of the larger amount. But go to the webpage, JMCC, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.